Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 22nd of Shivat. We thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwich and David Hachhauser, for making this year available to you online. And today we're going to study Shut Igrot Moshe in the Evan Ezra section, Chilek Aleph Simon Lamed Hey. This is a tshuva date of the 22nd of Shivat of Tofresh Tzavi Dalid of 1934 in Luban. It's a reminder that Rav Moshe Feinstein, 1934, he's almost a 40-year-old man. He's still in Luban. He's still in Russia. He lived in Uzden. He lived in Luban. He doesn't come to America for a while yet. So this is the very young Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he's dealing with the more theoretical question. The wife of one's father-in-law. So the wife of one's father-in-law is often thought of as one's mother-in-law, but a mother-in-law means the mother of one's wife. So the mother of one's wife is usher as a doraisa level because she's the mother of your wife. Not allowed to have a man's not allowed to have a relation with the mother of one with his wife's mother. But let's say his father-in-law has a second wife. Can a man marry, let's say marriage dissolves or the father-in-law passes away? Can then the wife that marriage ends? Can the man marry the former mother-in-law who's not actually related to the wife or the former wife? So that we assume is Shasrim ne marit ayin la Yushalmi. Shevio tosu yivamos and dachafalem saidi Yushalmi. And Rabbeinu Tam and the Rosh say that it's a matter of marit ayin. Now when you hear marit ayin means that people will see what's going on and get the wrong idea. Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that Taz held that the wrong idea is that you'll think that it's actually your mother, the man's mother-in-law. It's actually the mother of the wife. Meaning, so let's say a guy named, we always use Reuven, Shimon, Levi, I'm not sure why, but let's say a man named Reuven marries a woman named Rivka, and Rivka's father is a guy named Yitzchak, and this Yitzchak is married to a woman named Rachel, or whatever it is. But that Rachel, the Taz says, people will assume that Rachel is the mother of the Sarah that this Reuven was married to, the mother of the wife that this man was married to, and that's the Marinai. The Marinai is, it'll look like he's marrying his wife's mother. And the Noam Yudah seems to have agreed with that as well. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, "Nira la'aniyat da'ati davar hadash." I have a new idea. I think it's not true, and I have this new insight into what the marit ayin is. Now, I think it becomes characteristic of Moshe Feinstein in many, many ways, and it's worth noting and remarkable that Rav Moshe Feinstein is willing to take new positions even against earlier authorities if that's what seems to him correct. Now, in many cases, that was extremely helpful to the advancement of halacha because it allowed him to find interesting new heterium that then became accepted. People came to think of as the MS of Torah, as one truth of Torah that was worth acting upon. Here's going to be an example of Moshe Feinstein using his creativity, his halachic creativity, and his halachic daring, because he's willing to say, as a relatively young man, that I think that the Taz and the Yehuda focus on something. He says, "Demehechi tesi nachush la'anot l'tot b'chazeh." Is why would we think to make that mistake? Now that is such an interesting claim, right? That's a claim about intuition. That's a claim about what would we generally assume. What are natural assumptions for people? So the Noam Yehuda and the Taz both clearly assume that if you see a man marrying his mother-in-law, his former mother-in-law, that people would assume that's his wife's mother. Sitting here today, I think to myself, that's just like a reasonable assumption. Moshe Feinstein doesn't understand the assumption. It's well known that people marry other second wives. Now, to prove the point that there are cases where, if it's well known that there's a mutter way to do something, we assume that, right? That's really his problem. The problem that's going to allow us to take a long detour into an interesting halakhic question of its own, but a long detour to try to prove that when somebody's acting in a certain way and there's a clear, simple way for that to be halakhically permissible, that we'll assume that it's halakhically permissible. Based on that detour, he's going to say, well, since it's clearly true that there are women who could be married, it's eminently possible that there are women to whom a father-in-law is married who are not the mothers of man's wife. So if he marries her, there's no reason why we have to think there's a marit ayin issue that people will assume that he's marrying his wife's mother. That's such an interesting claim, right? What is it we do and don't claim about people? You know, when I'm growing up, people say, oh, you can't go into McDonald's even to order a soda because people get Myers Ion issue. They'll assume you're doing the wrong way. But if there's a soda that's readily available to order, then why would people assume that? Moshe Feinstein is sort of making that claim here. He's not talking about McDonald's at all, but he's making that claim here. And here's the detour he takes, that it's permissible to rent a field to a non-Jew because many people, when they rent fields, they rent it what's called arisut. Arisut is a form of, there are different rental agreements that one can have when one rents a field. And arisut is like a sharecropping agreement. Shared agreement being that the renter, the man who's working the field, will give the owner 10%, 20%, whatever it may be, and keep the rest for himself. That's opposed to a chachirut. Chachirut is you pay a fixed rent to take the field. So when it's fixed rent to take the field, that's a whole different issue. But arisut is that, yes, the Jew is getting a percentage, but since the non-Jew is getting a percentage as well, it becomes the non-Jew's field, as it were, and therefore if people see the field being worked on Shabbos and other times when it's not permissible to work the field, it doesn't become a problem of a marit ayin that people will assume the Jew is having his field worked on Shabbat. Meaning, to hire a non-Jew to work your field on Shabbat, that's a problem because it's your field and you're not supposed to have your field being worked on Shabbat. But if the non-Jew is getting an ownership stake in it, because percentage, we've seen this in other Shivot as well, we've seen that the halacha, the Noda Behuda for sure, accepted the idea that if a non-Jew is going to staff a Jewishly owned store, as long as the non-Jew gets some percentage of the profits, he seems to think that it could even be like 1% of the profits. As long as the non-Jew gets some percentage commission of what's going on that day, then that's permissible because he has a stake and he's not doing it for the Jew, he's doing it for himself. Here too, Moshe Feinstein is saying, we see that even though there's generally and often a marit ayin issue, an issue that we worry that people will see a field being worked on Shabbat or Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed is a good example of it, and will worry that people will take the wrong idea, since it's in fields, since there's an obvious, easy way to assume that it's being done in a mutter way, which is that the non-Jew is getting a share of the profits, that's allowed. So then it's also about what the percentages are. Some, the Be'er Halacha, seem to think that it might have to be half and half, which I don't think we possibly think. Even if the non-Jew is getting less than half and half, we might think it's okay. Moshe Feinstein says it may be even less than half and half. And then he says, because clearly there's no reason to say, and again, those are words to me that are worth paying attention to, because I don't have to question whether Moshe Feinstein is right or wrong to notice that he's making a jump that seems obvious to him. And to me, in my experience in life, that which seems obvious to one person, even to one great Torah scholar, isn't always obvious to another person, even another equally great Torah scholar. So that the question of what's obvious is such an interesting one. So Moshe Feinstein says it's obviously the Vaday. Certainly there's no reason to say there would be no Tam, and those who disagree, there are those who disagree. The question there became, what about building a house on a Jew's property? Can non-Jews work to build a house on a Jew's property? As Machlokas, we've shown him about it. And there, let's say the house is built b'kablanut. So b'kablanut means that I don't pay the contractor. I pay the contractor a fixed fee based on the job. And therefore, when he's working to finish it faster, he's working for himself because he wants to be free to do another job. Whereas if I'm paying him by the day, hourly wages, so then I can say, well, I'm not going to pay you hourly wages on Shabbos, because then on Shabbos you're working for me and I don't want to do that. So that's a whole question about that. So Moshe Feinstein says, certainly when they argue about that, they're not arguing about the metzius, about the reality of the situation. That, by the way, is a long-standing bugaboo of halachic discussions. Is when or is it possible that people have debates about metziut, about reality? I grew up in a, to the extent that I grew up in Torah in any way whatsoever, I grew up in a Brisker world. In the Brisker world also, they were very resistant to the idea that you would say, there's a bit of metziut about the reality, because they would say, well, just go check the reality. Now, I have to say, many years later, it strikes me there are times when it's hard to check the reality. There are many realities in the world today that we know are realities of the world, and we have no way of checking them out. So, I don't know that it's so simple to check out. Meaning, he says, check out Eichu HaRov. What's the Rov? Do most people hire the Kablanu? Pay contractors a fixed fee, or do most people pay contractors by the hour, by the day, or whatever? So it could be that in their small, tiny communities, they assume the Rav Moshe Feinstein would say, well, you got 200 people in the community, just check around what contractors do. There are not more than 5-10 contractors in the area. Maybe there, but you know, in a world where I live, I can easily imagine a debate about Metziut on many, many issues in halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein, however, in this Jew is saying, it doesn't make sense. It's got to be the majority pay daily wages, and that would make it prohibited to do, but there's a significant minority who do it to pay for the job as a whole, and therefore, it's held that since there's a minority, once it's enough of a minority, it means that there are out there people who do it in such a way that it would be permissible for the non-Jew to work on Shabbos because he's really working for himself. Nobody would therefore suspect the particular Jew who has a non-Jew doing that or doing it in the prohibited way, because why would he do it in the prohibited way? Let's do it in he can do it in the permissible way. And the others who held that, no, you're not allowed to, they would say, well, since the majority are paid by daily wages, and therefore people will assume that this is part of the majority. So in other words, instead of saying it's a debate about the metziut, about the reality, he's saying it's a debate about whether or not, when there's a minority who can do it in a permissible way, are we allowed to ignore the marit ayin problems and take for granted that other Jews who would see this going on would make the logical leap that this is being done in the permissible way. Now, when it comes to halacha, there's all debate about different kinds of situations. And Rosh Hashanah gets into that a little bit. There's a bathhouse case, and that might be more of a problem. And then there's the field that we spoke about already. There's a tanur and a rechaim. There's an oven that people bake in. There's a rechaim as people grind stuff in it. So there are different halachos there, and the Shulchan Aruch passes in different ways. So the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos sounds like he thinks the field is different than anything else. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein thinks that it works out. However, the in-ins and out go, we're not going to each of those cases, but it works out that it's like he said, that the debate is about whether or not in a minority case, will you worry about Marit Ayin or not. But at least the field, which is mentioned explicitly in the Gemara as being permissible, that's because of the Arisa question. The people do it as a sharecropping issue, then even if it's half and half, or maybe even a little bit less, you should have the permissibility of doing it, because you don't have to assume that people will suspect the man of doing it the wrong way. So if that's true, now come back to our case. If that's true, nobody would suspect. Now here he doesn't say for, so therefore, if I'm following that logic, I would say to myself, so if half the women in the world, or almost half the women, or a significant minority of women in the world, are second marriages, such that they're not the mother of, you know, we don't have to assume it's the mother of the wife of this Reuven. So he says it's got to be that people assume that when Reuven marries his father-in-law's former wife, it's got to be that it's not the mother. Why? Kivan shematsui tuva. This is what he says. It's commonly found, matsui tuva, in every city, that people marry another woman. And therefore, nobody would suspect of anything. So he doesn't say it's 50-50. He doesn't say it's almost 50-50. He says it's commonly found. Now, that's an interesting question. I don't know what the state of marriages was in, you know, White Russia or wherever the Moshe Feinstein is, in Luban at the time. But he seems to say second marriages are so common, there's just no way anybody would suspect of that. And then he makes it even more complicated, because even he says that you might tell me you need a majority, that it's in the mutter way, which is what the Mishnah Berurah seems to assume. The majority of people do by sharecropping rather than by paying fixed rents or something like that. He says that's only there because there are different options for how to do it. So once it's a question of, there are different options for how to do it. There's a mutter way and a prohibited way. Then he thinks it has to be the majority. Then Moshe is willing to concede that maybe it has to be the majority or 50% who do it in the permissible way. Otherwise, we'll suspect maybe he does it, maybe out of lack of knowledge, or maybe he wasn't thinking about it, he did it in the wrong way. So that's already, before we get back to the question of the mother-in-law, Moshe Feinstein is saying when it comes to ways of handling Hilchot Shabbos ways, if you're looking at people handling Hilchot Shabbos issues and they have choice about how to handle it, we only have to assume they're doing it in the right way if the majority of people do it in the right way. But if the majority of people do it in the wrong way, now before he said maybe even a little bit less than a majority, maybe even a miut, but he seems to think it has to be a pretty strong minority, you know, a 30%, 40%, 45% minority who are doing it the right way, that for us to be required to be allowed to assume he's doing the right way and not have to worry about Marit Ayin issues, that's the standard there. Because since people make choices, people sometimes make wrong choices or often, and if we watch that most people are doing it in ways, he doesn't mean only on Shabbos doing ways, he means if in general during the week people do it a certain way, that's the way you would generally assume they have to do it, not during the week. And on Shabbos, and if that's the wrong way, then you'd have a Marit Ayin problem unless enough of a minority does. That's the way he's saying it over there. But Va'af, and there, in that situation, he says, Va'afim yomar shasab ofen hemutter. So the question then becomes, with Marit Ayin in general, but even especially here, let's say the man explicitly says, no, I'm doing it the right way. I understand the halachos, I understand what it takes before I can have a non-Jew work this field on Shabbos, and that's the way we're doing it. He says, no, efshar shemishaker. It's possible that he's lying. So for Moshe Feinstein, the Marit Ayin question, when it comes to working a field, is significant enough, or other kinds of things, a bathhouse, or a tanur, or an oven, or a grindhouse, whatever it is, that are enough of an issue, that the Marit Ayin is enough of an issue, the way it looks to other people is enough of an issue, that if the majority of people do it the wrong way, let's say up until a significant minority, but let's say 80% of people do it the wrong way, do it not the wrong way because they're doing it Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, it's fine. But it's a way that if you do it on Shabbos, it's prohibited. Then even if the man tells us he's doing it the right way, nope, there's a Marit Ayin issue because we think that he might be lying. That's how far Moshe Feinstein is willing to go in terms of saying Marit Ayin is a significant problem. Now look at the flip when it comes to the mother-in-law, because you take that logic, it seems to me, I would have thought to myself, well, by definition, more marriages are first marriages than second marriages. Because there has to be a first marriage before there can be a second marriage. I would think that's true. Although it could be there are third and fourth and fifth marriages, and maybe that adds up to more than the 50%. But let's say a man's married to a woman, his mother was married to this. So it could be that the father-in-law had a previous first wife before he had this wife now, and the man marries her. Anyway, whatever those permutations are, I would have thought that there's not any more prevalent that there's a second wife out there or a non-prohibited wife out there, right? Than there is now, but that's not the way he goes. So in the case of the fields and the work like that, he says it could be lie. But here, since it's not talui bide adam, it's not his choice that there be another mother-in-law out there, that his mother-in-law be still alive, the real mother-in-law, the mother of his wife, still be alive. He can't make that happen. So therefore, we just don't say about everybody when we see that they're married, that their first wife and only wife, and they never had another wife. We don't say that. Why? Why don't we say that? Moshe Feinstein, like, he doesn't, to me, he's not so clear about that. I think the answer is because it's not your choice about how life works, and therefore we don't make assumptions about how life works. Whereas in other things where it's somebody within somebody's power to make the choices, there we make assumptions about it. Therefore, he says, why should we assume that this man who's now marrying a woman who used to be married to his father-in-law must be his mother-in-law on the Adarabba, right? The opposite. Let's assume that it's not his mother-in-law, because when he marries her, it's if he's saying to us, this is not the mother of my wife or former wife. And therefore, the Maharazayin can't be that we'll assume that this is his mother-in-law. Now, that's a remarkable thing, because he was willing to say the guy's lying about how the field is working out if the majority does a certain thing. But here, since it's not in his hands, he's saying, no, we don't have to assume he's lying. And it says, and not only isn't he, but even if he's not actively saying to us, I'm marrying a woman who's permitted to me, even if he's just acting that way, there he thinks it can't be that it's a Maharazayin question. It's a remarkable set of logic, which may or may not appeal to you, but it's remarkable logic because he's so clear on the distinctions that between, and the way that the distinction between whether a person has it in his power to make choices or not has to make choices, and how that affects our Maharazayin reaction to these people, that strikes me as very, very interesting. So therefore, he says that he thinks the Maharazayin of a mother-in-law meaning of a father-in-law's wife, only is relevant in two situations. There are only two situations where it's a real Maharazayin issue. One is, b'makom uvizman shayu l'chamiv hashtei nashim biyachad. So since it's not common that a man be married to two women at the same time, and these two were, though, but then everybody knows that the father-in-law was married to the wife's, to Reuven's wife's mother at the time, and they know this was a wife of the man at that time, so that Maharazayin, that combination of Moshe Feinstein things, is a Maharazayin issue and would be the problem for the Reuven to marry her. And the other option, he says, is that would be a problem, is let's say that the father-in-law married this woman when the girl who eventually became Reuven's wife, meaning the situation we're talking about here, something like something happened to Reuven's wife, she died, or they got divorced, whatever it is, then he wants to marry this other woman. And the ages sound crazy, right? Because who would want to marry his father-in-law's former wife? But sometimes, especially back then, people married women who were 20 and 30 years younger than them. So if Reuven is 25, let's say, and sadly his wife has passed away, his father-in-law might be 45, or he might even be less, depending on marriage back then. But the 45-year-old father-in-law was married to a 30-year-old woman, which was easily plausible. And the 25-year-old Reuven wants to marry now this 30-year-old woman whose marriage to the father-in-law ended. You know, if you want to make it somewhat realistic, let's even assume you're all happily married, you know, and everything happened, and then tragically the father and his daughter were killed in a car accident. And in the time of their grief, this wife, the widow of the father-in-law, and this Reuven, you know, got to friendly with each other, wanted to get married to each other, they have to get married. So Moshe Feinstein is saying that he doesn't think the issue is that everybody assumes that this woman is now the mother of the deceased daughter. And the age that I gave, it makes sense also because, what, if she was 15, it could have happened, but you wouldn't have thought so. So Moshe Feinstein is saying one situation, though, is if the father-in-law had married two women at the same time, so then people don't know which is which, and therefore that's a Maharazayin issue. And then the other one is, let's suppose that instead of the case that I just gave, let's suppose that the wife, the little girl who grew up to become the wife of this Reuven, her mother had passed away when she was young, and the father had married somebody else, and this woman, the father had married somebody else. And again, the ages don't have to work out, because in those days, people would get married in their teens. So let's say this girl was 5, her mother passes away, when she's 16, right? When she's 6, her father marries a woman who's, I don't know, 18, right? So she's 12 years younger than him. When she's 16, so the woman is 28, she marries this Reuven. 3 years later, sadly, she passes away. The woman is now 31. If Reuven's 25, it all works out, right? It's plausible. But since this woman is now the woman who basically raised the wife, so there too, much of I think there's a Mari Sayan issue, because everybody knows, everybody assumes in general that the woman who raises a girl is her mother. So in that situation, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, "Vadazev vaday shayach maris ayin sharei im kule alma lo yadu haita nechshevet bito bevaday." Right. So they would think that it's actually her mother, and they would and when we have a chazak like that, we even if it came to it would have a court, unless we had evidence the other way. A court might even put people to death on the basis of the assumption that these people have this relationship with each other. So, even though some people know that this is not really her biological daughter, there is a Mari Sayan issue. Therefore, the people don't know it, and therefore, you can't. That marriage would not be allowed because Mari Sayan. So that's the Mari Sayan of a mother-in-law that Rav Moshe Feinstein. And an example of that, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I think he means step-siblings, right? So step-siblings, some people say, cannot get married to each other, even though they're not at all related, right? A half-brother, half-sister, there's a blood relationship. But a step-sibling, there's no blood relationship. So can a step-sister and brother get married to each other? So there are those who say they cannot, but Rav Moshe Feinstein says, that's only when they were raised in one house. Meaning, let's suppose, you know, a 20-year-old man and a 19-year-old woman, their parents get married, right? And they meet at the wedding, or they meet when their parents are dating, and they find out that they also share things. Meaning, if the parents liked each other in some way, it's not unfathomable that they'll like each other. Can they get married? So there are those who say that it's usher for them to get married. Moshe Feinstein, that's only when they were raised as children together. Because then you have a Mari Sayan issue, because people who see it will say, well, they look like they're siblings with each other, and therefore there'd be a problem. But if they never were raised in a house together, there's no Mari Sayan issue, and therefore Moshe Feinstein seems to think that would be okay. Then he throws in that he thinks that this whole Mari Sayan question isn't only a rabbinic issue. It's not only like an issue of they made an issue of Mari Sayan, because he thinks that there's the Torah issues of worrying about how people see, because there's a pasuk that says, V'yitem nekiyim Hashem Yisrael, V'yitem nekiyim Hashem Yisrael means you shall be clean from, it said, I think, to B'nai God of B'nai Reuven. But it means that you have to act in such a way that Hashem and the Jewish people will know that you're acting the right way. And Moshe Feinstein says he thinks that's a source for Mari Sayan, that we have to act in ways that people assume we're doing the right thing, and we can't just assume, we can't just require them to make assumptions about us or try to figure out ways in which we're doing the right thing. We have to act in the proper in ways they won't. There's also a Chil Hashem issue, we think. If people see us acting in ways that they think of that seem to them to be wrong and mistaken ways, so there's a Chil Hashem, and people will think we're doing the wrong thing, so therefore that's what we have to avoid. But it's only in the ways that he has said, laid out for us in this tshuva. And therefore, in our times, he said, in our places where you can't marry two women, right? Nowadays, there is no such thing as marrying two women. So that gets rid of one, because of the Cherem Ben Gershom, that gets rid of one of the scenarios in which he said there might be a mother-in-law-ish. So he therefore basically thinks that the only time that a former mother-in-law would be prohibited for a man to marry, so she's not actually the mother of his wife. You can never marry your wife's mother, or your former wife's mother, or your deceased wife's mother. You can never do that. But the question of the mother-in-law, Roger Price thinks, would only be an issue if this was the woman who raised one's wife. So once the woman raised one's wife, there's a Maridayan issue that he thinks is irrelevant. Then he discusses, there's a Chasam Sofer in Siman Lamed Chet. Chasam Sofer, whatever the issue is, we're not going to get into all of the issue, but Chasam Sofer there says that when it comes to Maridayan, to people getting the wrong idea, you can prohibit even that which is specifically permitted in the Torah. There's a whole question in Halacha about when the Torah specifically something is permitted, right? There are lots of areas in the Torah which are permitted because the Torah never said they're prohibited. But sometimes the Torah says something specifically permitted. So if it's specifically permitted, you might think there are times when we say that there's no way that we can come after the fact and prohibit them. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Chasam Sofer, says, well, you think when it comes to Mari Sayan, you can, because there it's clearly talui b'makom u'bazman. It's clearly dependent on the time in which one lives, because if they're not b'nei Torah in the time in which you live, so then you have to make fences, you have to do things to prevent people from getting the wrong idea in various ways. I don't know if the Chasam Sofer didn't mean that was because of reform and things like that, but in case Rav Moshe Feinstein said, that's dachuk. I don't believe that makes sense, because why is that different than maybe people extrapolate wrongly from your actions? Meaning, Maridayan is where people think you assume you're doing the wrong thing. That's one kind of a problem. Another kind of problem is you might be doing the right thing. People will understand that you're doing the right thing, but they'll misunderstand the conditions that make it right for what you're doing, and therefore they'll do the wrong thing. That's not a Maridayan question. That's not, they'll assume you're doing the wrong thing. It's that they'll get the wrong idea. So the example in Tosafot was lending at interest to non-Jews. So you lend interest to non-Jews. So there are those who say not to do it because other people will learn that if you can do it to non-Jews, maybe you can do it to Jews and look at the wrong idea. Now, again, that's not a Maharayan question. That's they'll get the wrong extrapolation from it. So Tosa says, but if it was written explicitly in the Torah that one is allowed, so there actually this whole discussion that we're not going to get into now, but in the Torah it does say lanochri tashik, you should give it to it. So the question is, what does that mean? Not our topic, but the point is Tosa says that which is written explicitly in the Torah you can't prohibit because people will learn the wrong lesson or because of marit ayin. So Rav Moshe thinks that can't be right. If it's written explicitly in the Torah to permit something, then that can't be that it's a question of the time in which you live and things like that, the way the Chassid Sofer said. And also, he thinks that generally, Marid Ayin is totally be'imhem b'nei Torah or not. He doesn't understand how the Chassid Sofer got the idea that Marid Ayin is a question of whether people around you are b'nei Torah. That's what Chassid Sofer had said. Even if it's explicitly permissible, you can have a worry about Marit Ayin later on because you're living in a place where the people aren't B'nai Torah. So Moshe Feinstein says, I don't understand why that's a concern, because according to Marit Ayin, they're going to make it essentially doing the wrong thing, and even B'nai Torah would then assume that the wrong thing that you're doing is correct, and they'd get the wrong impression. So I'm not sure that's such a strong claim, because you say, no, B'nai Torah will understand you're doing the wrong thing, or they'll think you're doing the wrong thing, and they'll look down on you for it. Right? Marit Ayin is, they'll get the wrong idea, they'll think you're doing the wrong thing, even if you're doing the right thing. That's what Marit Ayin is worried about. They'll think you're doing the wrong thing, and then what's the next reaction? So one reaction would be, and they'll then decide that it's okay. But the other possibility is they'll just look down on you for it, but you're not supposed to be doing those things to be giving people the impression that you're doing the wrong thing. But Moshe Feinstein doesn't see it that way. And therefore, he thinks the Marit Ayin doesn't depend on whether people are B'nai Torah or not. And therefore, since it's explicitly permitted in the Torah, he thinks that it's got to be okay, and Marit Ayin can't get in the place there. Then he quotes a Tshuvas HaGaonim, which says that Eshet Chamiv can be allowed, the wife of one's father-in-law can be permissible. Not the mother of one's wife, but the wife of one's father-in-law is permitted. Avabat Chorgo Asu Rab Marit Ayin. But the daughter of a stepdaughter is prohibited because of Marit Ayin. Upashit who told Sofer, the Bat Chorgo who Bat Pina. Right, so Bat Chorgo is the daughter of one's stepdaughter. Is an actual arayos. It's the daughter of one's wife, right? The daughter of one's stepdaughter is the granddaughter or the grandson, the granddaughter of one's wife, and therefore that's going to be a problem, b'sreifa, right? So it's got to be that it means the wife of one's stepson, right? Bat Chorgo is one's, they're not one's stepdaughter, one's stepson, and so it's got to mean, therefore, so the daughter of one's stepson is the granddaughter of one's wife. That's prohibited at the Torah level, Moshe Feinstein says. It's got to be a Torah Sofer, it's got to be a manuscript mistake, and it really means Eshet Chorgo, the wife of one's stepson, after that marriage dissolves him for some reason. But the problem was that there's another Tshuva Gaon which says explicitly that the wife of one's stepson is permissible. So Moshe Feinstein says, according to my Tshuva here, we've got a good answer. Eshet Chorgo, the wife of one stepson, is prohibited if that stepson grew up in the home of this man. Meaning, when a man marries a woman and gets a stepson, he can get a child stepson and raise that kid. I just saw a beautiful story yesterday. Actually, I came across a beautiful story about a man who married a 9/11 widow, and she had a two or three. She at the time they got married. The kid was like 2 years old when the father was killed in 9/11, and then a few years later she met and married this man, and he raised him as his son. So in that situation, if that son marries a woman, and that marriage dissolves for whatever reason, the stepfather can't marry her, Moshe Feinstein says, because that'll be a Marit Ayin problem, because since he raised him, he will look like he's actually his actual biological father, and then it'll look like it's an Arayos question. But if, instead, let's say in the same case, he had met the woman 15 years after they actually met, so by that time the kid is 20 years old, and so he's not really a stepson in that sense. He gets married to a woman, then he later does, and then that marriage later dissolves, and then the stepfather wants to marry her. That wouldn't be an issue. So that is fundamentally the Rav Moshe Feinstein's take on the Marit Ayin issues that come up with marrying the former wife of one's former father-in-law. Moshe Feinstein thinks the ordinary Marit Ayin question of maybe it'll look like it's a rash relationship, that he doesn't think, he's not impressed by, because he thinks people will know and would assume that there's such thing as second marriages, and they'll never jump to the conclusion that no, he's doing the wrong thing, unless this is the woman who raised his, unless there's a two marriage issue, which you don't have to get into because of it, or this is the woman who raised his first wife, and then it'll look too much like his mother, therefore he's not allowed, and the same thing will be true. If he raised a boy, then he can't marry that boy when he becomes a man's former wife, because it'll look too much like it. The Rav Moshe Feinstein married Ayin is a little bit narrower than we might have thought, because he thinks there are many cases where people are required to assume that one is doing it the right way rather than in the wrong way, and these are some situations where you're not. So that's some introduction to Marius Ayin issues for Rav Moshe Feinstein, responsible day for the 22nd of Shvat, with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bramowitz, and to David Hachhauser. Have a great day.